Entertaining, well-structured conversation is not an anagram of the Failing Writers podcast. Persisting, flawed chat riot, however.
Oh, it's good to be back, isn't it?
It is good to be back. It's another late night session with Thomas Turner. How you doing, buddy?
I haven't got the late night vibe tonight. I don't know why.
Have you not?
Oh, no, that's
a shame. I was liking that character.
Yeah.
No, daytime TV, kids TV. Let's do it. It's kids TV presenters.
Hey, I haven't got the energy for that, man.
What have we got coming up on today's show?
Well, first things first, you know what we should do? We should ask the question.
Are we still asking that question? Do we need to ask that question?
I think that question is...
We're just going to assume that no one's written anything.
Yeah.
Of course, I've only brought that up because I have actually been doing
stuff. Of course you have.
Yeah.
It's December now,
I've got
it?
A Learney Share. Do you want to hear a Learney Share?
Oh, yeah, go on then.
So I was about halfway through my outline of the murder mystery thing, and I thought,
this is rubbish.
This is absolute toilet. No, I thought I'm just going to start writing it.
Yep.
And, you know, screw it. I'm going to discovery write the rest of it. When I get to the point where I haven't outlined any more of it, I'm just going to keep going. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
But then I happened to re-listen to the interview that is coming up right now with Sally Wainwright, OBE.
Yeah.
And there was a very sound bit of advice in the middle of that interview. And I U-turned and I decided to finish outlining each chapter properly before starting. Because I was thinking, actually, if I do that, then in theory, it should A, make writing it much easier.
Yes.
Well, that's the theory, isn't it?
That's
It should reduce the amount of redrafting that I have to do afterwards.
Yeah.
Because in theory, I will actually have, you know, everything should fit in place.
It should just fall into place, yeah.
I think that's the thing, isn't it, with novel writing. You can go about it in so many different ways, but it's the same amount of work, whichever way you go at it. It's just you can either choose to do some of that work up front.
I don't know. I think with genre writing, it might be a case of if you outline it properly, there might be less work.
Yeah, but then the work goes into the outlining, doesn't it, instead of the rewriting.
Well, that's true.
So,
that's what I mean. Yeah. You've still got the same amount of work.
Yeah.
But I feel like it in different places. But it's about what's easiest for you, isn't it?
I mean, it's hard plotting, isn't it? It's actually really, it's taxing on the brain.
Yeah, yeah.
But in theory, once it's done, like, you shouldn't have to rewrite loads and loads of words.
Yeah.
I mean, you're quite quick at words, Tommy, but I think I get myself into right little knotty binds over the actual writing of stuff. I always worry whether it's good enough or whether it's flowing, whether it's like I'm giving away too much. Are the characters working? You know, all that kind of stuff. Is it too cliche?
Well, if there's one other thing that we've learned in this podcast, that is just to ignore that, isn't it? That's the other thing that comes up time and time again.
Yeah. Stop bloody talking about it.
Stop doing a podcast about it and just bloody do it. Yeah,
but it shouldn't be that hard though, because it's just thinking, isn't it? Thinking shouldn't be difficult.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It shouldn't like be thinking for a while and then go, "God, bloody hell, I'm tired. All that thinking I've been doing today."
Well, but, it's still using energy, isn't it?
Draining, isn't it? Yeah,
it is draining.
All that brain power.
8 hours a day thinking down pit. I was
absolutely knackered.
Other lads used to come up fresh as daisies from cutting the coal out of the wall with the bare hands. I'd be there thinking, and I'd be knackered.
Hey, you joke, but brains, they do take a lot of energy, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Relatively speaking,
Big old organs.
Yeah, they do. Bairdy, where did you get to in your outline before you just started writing? Did you actually, I can't remember whether you said you finished it.
No.
You didn't quite finish it, did you?
I got about two-thirds of the way through.
All right, okay.
And fittingly, the last third was the most difficult. What's been really interesting is that having not quite finished it in the novel writing month, and thinking, I'll do it in my own time, I haven't been able to do a blooming thing since.
Yeah.
Now I don't have that sort of, I've got to do it because of this deadline for this month. I've got absolutely zero motivation to do anything at all.
That's weird, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Why don't you join me for Dedo Dido or whatever?
Perhaps I should, yeah. I'll get into it. Maybe I just needed to take like a week off and recharge a bit.
Exactly. Have a little moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway. That's my news. Exciting, huh?
Well,
but I'm really enjoying plotting. I think maybe I enjoy plotting more than writing. I don't know. I'll tell you when I've written.
Yeah, do the other bit and then decide. Well, that's good, John. At least you're into it.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. It's good. So, Thomas, been up to anything? Okay, Bairdy.
No good. Let's move on.
So yeah, should we move on with the let's move on with the podcast.
Yeah, let's get on to somebody who hasn't been resting on her laurels and has been boshing out top quality scripts for many a year now. I am, of course, talking
I just like leaving Dave. Guests. If you leave a big enough gap, Dave can't help but fill it, and he just has to...
He just keeps going. Sorry, I thought you were halfway through a sentence.
I would be terrible in a police interview situation. You know that, technique?
Yeah.
You're
not getting anything out of me unless you stay quiet for 4 seconds, and I will tell you everything.
Okay, it was me. So, as I was saying before, I was rudely interrupted.
We literally didn't interrupt you. We were silent. That was the point.
Well, as I interrupted my own self, we've got the wonderful BAFTA award-winning Sally Wainwright. And it's a great interview. It really is. It was fascinating talking to her.
It was a little bit of an honour to have Sally on the show.
It really was.
Sally Wainwright, she discusses writing crisps and driving buses, never whines and never fusses, just cracks on unlike us wusses. Doesn't stand by idly wishing she's a woman on a mission. Might put out bombs in the kitchen, but she ignites your television. We're getting pally, 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 pally with Sally, 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 Sally. Proper happy valley, 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 valley. With Sally, 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 Sally,
Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally,
Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally,
Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally,
Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally,
Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, Sally, for us to have you here, so
it is.
Yeah.
We're quite grateful.
Yeah,
it's quite a big deal for us. So if we sound nervous, that's why. Okay.
Okay. Okay. I'll enjoy your nervousness.
So Sally, we could kick off. I was thinking maybe we could kick off doing like a quick tour of your career, like a kind of open top bus tour. Just kind of start at the beginning. Well, you're holding the mic. You can point out a few.
That was
going to
be my first question, John. Speaking of buses.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, yeah.
That leads on nicely.
I mean, that's what I want to know about. I don't really care about all the writing stuff. Whatever. But what sort of route did you do? There must have been some funny stories.
Well, I drove out of two garages. I drove out of Hounslow for a couple of months, and then I drove out of Stamford Hill for a couple of months. And you tend to do, I think I did between 7 and 8 routes at each garage. So you're driving a different route like every week.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I think the most famous ones I drove were when I was at Hounslow, I drove the 37.
One of my favourite routes.
Well, this is the thing. Whenever I mention the 37, you always know, often meet someone who uses it. So that went from Hounslow through Isleworth, through Richmond, down through Wandsworth to Putney. I think it was actually the longest trip in London, the 37.
Oh, blimey. Did you ever have to do the night bus?
Yeah, I did the night buses a couple of times. And then when I moved up to Stamford Hill, my most famous route that people go, oh, that's my bus, the 73, which went down from Tottenham round the back of Buckingham Palace. And I can't remember.
Nice.
But it was, it went up Marble Arch, I think, and all sorts. I can't remember. So
it's a classic route.
I guarantee.
I mentioned buses often. People go, "Oh, I get on the 73."
I guarantee somewhere there's a podcast for discussing bus routes, and I think we've got a bit of crossover here, haven't we? Because subject.
But I think it's one of those jobs that, like being a postman, I think there are certain jobs that writers tend to do early in their lives, and I think it's one of those. It can be one.
Yeah, because you wrote. Yeah. Was it Jane Hall? Was about a female bus driver. So
yeah, Jane Hall, the badly titled Jane Hall, which was originally called Jane Hall's Big Bad Bus Ride.
Oh, much better.
ITV decided to call it Jane Hall, so nobody would know what it was about.
Oh, took the fun out of that.
Nobody watched it, and it didn't go down very well. So there you go.
Well, we're big on failures on this podcast, Sally. We are the failing writers.
Okay.
Hopefully, we will start to fail less at some point.
One day, yeah.
That is kind of the shtick of the show, is that obviously you have not been invited on the show as a failing writer. But having said that, everybody has their moments.
Oh, God.
And we like to, we like to pick away at the scab a little bit. What have been your sort of... your lowest moments in your writing career, and what have they taught you?
Well, it's, every time you write something or every time you film something, it's a mixture of highs and lows. So it's not like, it, you know, it's brilliant to have your own stuff on telly and to get your own shows greenlit and to be, you know, working on your own stuff. But it's, you know, with that comes a lot of responsibility as well, the responsibility to produce a show that people are going to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And the broadcasters are going to be pleased that they, you know, invested in you. And so sometimes it can be frustrating when it isn't what you want it to be, or somebody hasn't quite done their job in the way that you would have wanted them to do it, often with mixed directors, which is why I kind of ended up directing myself.
Yeah, yeah, because you were like looking at what they were doing and thinking, I could maybe do better there.
Well, I knew I could, to be honest. Although having said that, I've just been working with some fantastic directors on the new series, Gentleman Jack. So that's been fantastic. But you know, it is ups and downs, and you have your own demons that you have to live with when you're writing. I say this all the time to young new writers. There's not one script I've written where I haven't gone through a phase of thinking, oh my God, this is the one I can't write.
Really?
It's such an alchemy as writing. It's such I mean, you do get to a point in your career where you've been doing it for so long, you kind of know that's not going to happen. But you still go through it every time.
Yeah. Does that often come at the same point of a script?
No, not necessarily. You know, it's often how well you've thought through your stories or not that causes it to happen. But it's always a balancing act. It's always a balancing act of, is this as good as I want it to be? Is, you know, it's good enough, but could it be better? You know, and always wanting to be it to be absolutely the best at every moment, rather than just going, oh well, this'll do. Oh, they'll buy this.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this will entertain them for a few minutes. You know, I never think like that. It always has to be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, your shows don't have the feel of a show that's just, you know, oh, that'll do. That'll be fine.
No, absolutely not.
You always seem to be introducing things that put the characters into problems as well. My wife said she's quite mean to her characters, isn't she? I thought, yeah, that's exactly it.
Well, you know, it's interesting that... you know, the drama is about when things go wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
When things go right, it's not actually very dramatic.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, I think being mean to your characters is just what drama is. I often say it's about when bad things happen to good people, or it's about when bad things happen to bad people. But when bad things happen. It's about how people deal with bad stuff or challenging stuff. But you know, there isn't much drama in someone like winning the lottery until something goes wrong, you know. Like in Last Tango in Halifax, I know Derek sometimes thinks I don't give him as good storylines as some of the other characters, and it's kind of because his character's such a nice person and the others just aren't, and so more interesting things happen to them because they make more mistakes, because they're kind of more flawed. So I think that's the problem with accusing you of making mean things happen to people. I think you might not be interested in watching it if I didn't.
No, exactly.
Do you think your sort of writing process has changed over the years?
It's evolved, I would say, rather than changed.
Yeah.
Sally, sorry, I think I can hear something.
Something's beefy in my kitchen.
Yeah.
Wait, is that what I think it is?
Oh my God.
Is that a bomb?
Yeah.
Wow, you seem relatively calm about it.
Just got to go and turn it off.
Just go and turn it off.
It was at that moment I think we all realised that professionally Sally Wainwright is just working on a different level to the rest of us.
Yeah, not only is she constantly putting her characters in threatening situations, but she also relishes mortal peril in her own everyday life too.
Yeah, it's amazing how calm she was.
I can talk at the same time as turning the...
Oh God, Sally, are you literally going to continue chatting with us while you defuse a bomb?
I hope so. I think the process has evolved. As time's gone on, it's not changed massively. I tend to work out what the stories are, and I do that with whoever I'm working with an exec, storyliners.
Sally, sorry to interrupt. Are you sure you don't want me to call the like bomb squad or something?
No, I'm fine.
It seems quite difficult. I mean, like, you know, knowing which wire to cut and stuff. Is that
every step of the process has to be correct?
Yeah, I suppose it does.
Is it over?
Yes, it is.
Wow. Well done, Sally. Oh, God, glad you're okay. I mean, I suggest you maybe don't set yourself any other dangerous, life-threatening tasks during the interview, or it might be over a lot quicker than we imagined.
I wish it was.
And then she just, you know, carried on with the interview, like defusing a bomb was the most normal of domestic chores. It really was extraordinary.
Well, we'll map out the whole arc of a series, which will be much more detailed in the earlier parts and less detailed in the later parts. And then as you work through the series, you build up that detail. But, you know, you do start off hopefully with an idea of what the big arc is. And then with each episode, I go away and write a really detailed scene breakdown. So I'll be writing something like 10 pages of detailed scene breakdown, so that by the time I actually come to write the dialogue, I've solved a lot of the problems. Like, I've got structure.
Right.
I know what everyone's doing through the episode. I know what their developments are through the episode.
Yeah,
yeah.
So by the time I get to write the script, ideally it's kind of the icing on the cake. That's the fun bit after you've done all the really hard work.
Right.
Of yeah.
And working out what the plot is and what's juxtaposed with what else. And, you know, making sure that you're not shortchanging one story in favour of another, if that isn't the right thing to do. Or, you know, you're not spending too much time on a boring storyline when there's a really urgent one that needs more time and space. And and it's hard work. Writing the scene breakdown for me is the hardest part. I'm just working on the scene breakdown at the moment, and it's taken me about 3 days to kind of just write down what the first two scenes are. It tends to get quicker than that. You know, it picks up its own pace as it goes on. But I often say it's like building a wall. It's because if you build on dodgy, you're going to build a wall that's going to fall over. Whereas if each section, as you put it in place, you're completely happy with, you've thought it through, you've spent time, even if it's done your head in getting to that point, it means you're building something solid rather than building something that's going to fall over at the first hurdle.
And have you always been that meticulous in your planning right from the very early days?
I think I have been that meticulous, and I think it's probably comes from fear of getting it wrong, or fear of failure or something. But I think I'm a bit of a perfectionist. If something isn't absolutely perfect, or to my mind perfect at least, I can't move on till I know it is.
Yeah.
Is that the same with everything in life?
God,
or is that a writing thing?
I think it's just writing.
Right.
Everything else is all a bit ad hoc.
That's interesting.
Seat of pants. But writing is the one thing that I suppose I take seriously.
Right.
Well, you do seem to achieve quite a high level of perfection in your script.
Yeah.
That sounds a bit crawly, doesn't it? But it's true. It is true.
Oh, like, sorry, I think you're wonderful. My name's John and I think you're brilliant.
I was thinking about Happy Valley. I rewatched Happy Valley very recently. But everything is so tight. There's nothing extraneous in there at all. There's every bit of dialogue. It seems to both push the action on, but also reveal something about the character as well. And it is amazing, really.
I think the hallmark of great writing is making sure that every scene and every beat is doing more than one thing.
Yeah, even the comedy, even the comedy is saying something about the characters. It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, any one scene should be pushing the plot along. It should be telling you something that you didn't know about a character.
Mm.
It should be hopefully making you laugh or making you cry or evoking some emotion. It should be doing at least those three things, and ideally, four more things as well.
But I think the true art form, though, is being able to do those things, Sally, without the viewer being explicitly aware that that's what's happening.
I think they are aware, though, because I think when you don't do it, they get bored. Or they kind of know that they're not in very good storytelling hands and can sense it a mile off. And I think that's the thing with a TV audience. It's so easy to lose them. It's so easy for them just to switch over and go make a cup of tea.
Just coming back to Happy Valley, it's just such a lovely bit of drama. But I'm always interested, and I think I'm sure our listeners will be interested in your process. Can you talk us through how you developed the idea? Like, what was the initial seed of the idea, and then how did you begin to develop that into the script? Can you remember?
I often get asked that, and it's quite a hard one to answer, partly because I can't remember.
Yeah.
But often it's a process that you're kind of conscious of it, but it's often quite quick rather than something that you labour over. I mean, you know, on a very pragmatic level, I invented Happy Valley because the BBC asked me for, they wanted a Scott and Bailey, which was on ITV.
Right, okay.
what can I do that's Scott and Bailey? And the obvious thing I could do was, Scott and Bailey was about a major incident team, so they're very highly trained team of detectives. So one of the obvious differences I thought I could do was write about someone in uniform. Mm. She's just as highly trained, but she's a sergeant. She's a uniform sergeant rather than a detective. Yeah. And then I thought about, I knew I wanted to write something else for Sarah because of the way she played Caroline in Last Tango. That just really...
Oh, she's just so amazing.
And I had also had ideas about writing a sort of modern version of Juliet Bravo, which was one of my favourite shows when I was like... I really liked it. You know, it was an episode.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Drama. There was a woman inspector... who was like the main character, which was, you know, that was its kind of USP. That was very unusual at the time. And it was set, I think it was filmed in and around Todmorden. And I absolutely loved it as a kid. I really, well, teenager, I should say. And so I thought, why don't I write my own version of Juliet Bravo? Also, I had a massive, massive crush, I suppose, on the drama Nurse Jackie, American drama Nurse Jackie. But that was one of the best TV shows ever. It's like in my top five TV shows of all time. It kind of went off in some of the later series, but I think the first series particularly was just mind-blowingly good. It's one of those shows that you think it's so good and you just learn from it. I just wanted to write my own version of Nurse Jackie. And in a way, that's what Happy Valley was, except it wasn't about a nurse, it was about a policewoman. So it was a combination of those kind of things that made me write Happy Valley. I don't know where Tommy Lee Royce came from. I have a vague idea. But I don't know where the idea about him having had a relationship with Catherine's daughter and that, you know, Ryan being born from that. Mm. I honestly don't remember where that came from other than just sitting down making stuff up. Mm. I mean, everything comes from somewhere, but you don't always trace it back to where it came from. The idea of Tommy came from someone I know who was very bullying and nasty. And a couple of times in my life, I've realised I've written about things that have happened to me that have been bad, and I've kind of transposed them into something else. And I think that was what that was. Mm.
Yeah,
almost like a sort of cathartic thing. I'm going to write about.
Yeah, I mean, writing really is cathartic.
Yeah, it's a way of making sense of things, I suppose.
People have that compulsion to write. Have got that blessing that it can be very cathartic. Mm. You know, it does make you explore things and get things out there that you dwell on. It does have that, you know, effect on your imagination sometimes. And if you can turn it into something good, like a drama that people respond to, I think that's... It's curious. It's curious that happens, but it does.
Yeah.
Sally, can I ask, can I take you back to after the bus driving, but before sort of the stuff you're doing by yourself? Because you did a lot of Coronation Street, didn't you? And I'm fascinated to hear from you what that was like, how... I imagine it was like properly full on, like really fast, hard work.
That isn't the first thing I'd say about it. I mean, I think we had like 2 weeks to write an episode.
Wow.
So it wasn't necessarily that fast.
Right, okay.
It seems quite fast.
Sounds fast.
It does sound quite fast.
So, you know, the first time I wrote a play and it took me 6 months. And when I was a student, no, actually I wrote one overnight. But then I wrote a second one and it took me 6 months. I've been working on it. Like for an indefinite period of time. And when I got my first professional job, it was writing The Archers on Radio 4.
Oh, yeah. Of
and they asked me to write a trial script, and I did that and handed it in, and they offered me a job. And, you know, they didn't give me a deadline for writing the trial script. It was just like, send it when you've done it. And they gave me 50 quid to do the trial script.
Nice.
And then, I went to see Ruth Patterson, who was the editor then, and she said, we're going to take you on. And she said, but the big difference is you've got to write 5 episodes in 2 weeks, and instead of 50 quid, you're going to get 2,000 quid, which is a bit sharp, you know, in 20.
Wow. Good and bad.
But it was the first time I had a deadline, and I thought, how the hell am I going to write 5 episodes of something in 10 days or whatever it was?
Are these finished scripts or are these?
Yeah, I mean, they're only 15 minutes long, but it's still an hour and 15 minutes of drama, you know, 10 days or whatever.
I mean, the three of us haven't managed anything in 40 plus years, so that's some going, isn't it?
Well, it was a shock, but then it became a discipline. It became sort of point of honour that you could do that. Mm. And of course, you can write 15 minutes drama 5 times end is. It's just logistics, actually, when you think
about it. Yeah. I was going to ask about how useful that was in terms of training for the rest of your career. And because a lot of some writers sort of look down on the idea of continuing drama when they're starting out. But what would you say to them?
When you're starting out, any writing job is good because it's a challenge. I mean, I've got asked to write shows that people are snooty about, but when I wrote The Archers, it was me writing The Archers, so it was fucking good, you know. When I got asked to write shows that people think uncool, they're not cool because it's me writing them, so they're not going to be uncool. You know, I can turn it into what I want it to be. If people think this is a bit crap, well, let's show them.
This is Cora fucking Nation Street now.
I remember working with Elaine Page when I wrote The Archers, and she said that she thought writing was like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the better you become. And she was right with that. So to turn down work because you don't want it on your CV that you wrote, you know, casualty, well, just don't put it on your CV, you know. It's still a discipline. It's still showing what you can do within a format. And if you've got a great voice, people are going to hear it. Mm. You know, I don't quite understand that mentality. I think people are scared actually when they say I'm not going to apply for that, or I'm not going to fit in for that. It's like, well, why wouldn't you? You know, I'd rather be earning money writing than sitting at home not earning money and going, oh well, I'm just going to write films.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I don't understand people who look down on stuff because there are writers like, was it Kay Mellor started on Brooks? Used to work on Brookside and. Russell T. Davis was on Chuckle Vision for a while, and it's all these sort of things.
He peaked too. Many people say he peaked too soon.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been downhill ever since. Yeah.
Well, I used to work with Russell and Kay a lot at Granada. We worked on all sorts of shows you may not have heard of, things like Families and Mario's and Spring Hill. There were loads of daytime soaps that were.
Yeah.
And we just. It was fun and we learned a lot, and it was interesting. You know, it's always interesting to be sitting in storyline meetings and hearing other writers. When I worked on Coronation Street, there was this fantastic writer called Peter Worley, and he was just so good at stories. And I learned so much just listening to him. Story is the hardest thing. It's the hardest. You know, you've got to be able to write good characters, good stories and good dialogue. And for me, characters and dialogue come really easily, and the hardest thing by a mile is story.
Yeah.
And the great thing about working on soaps is the turnover of story is phenomenal, and there are people who are very skilled at it. And I know a lot of the time on ongoing soaps, it's kind of not always fantastic, but just now and again, there's a real humdinger of a story.
Yeah.
And certainly the period when I was writing Coronation Street in the mid to late 90s, and there was a real phenomenal amount of talent in the room, and it was a real privilege being there and listening. I never spoke. I was scared and I was really but I learned a hell of a lot.
I was reading something about how Kay Mellor sort of encouraged you to focus on original work. Mm. I'm going to ask about how influential she was, and about the other writers that you've worked with. Who are the ones that you sort of look up to and who have sort of helped you the most in your career?
Well, certainly Kay, because Kay is just naturally somebody who encourages anyone and everyone. She's a real broad-shouldered, kind, generous spirit is Kay, and she always was encouraging. Well, all of us who worked there at Granada at the same time, we were working on her shows. And I also felt comfortable with her. I don't know if it's because we're both from West Yorkshire, and I felt like I just knew her because of that.
Yeah.
I mean, other people I work with Russell a lot, and of course his work wonderful, and you know, he's someone I always admire and look up to. But there were so many people at Granada at that time, so many writers. I mean, it was fantastic the way Granada functioned at that time. It was like if you got in there, there was a whole kind of unofficial system for kind of stepping up the ladder.
Right. Yeah.
Right from, you know, writing, as I say, these afternoon soaps like Families and Revelations. That was a late night soap. As I say, probably never heard of them, but we spent ages writing this thing in the early 90s. Children's World, that was another fantastic one.
Oh yes,
oh, I remember
great
that.
Show to get on, and then ultimately could get onto Coronation Street, and that was like striking gold. And then through Kay's influence, the next thing for me was, now I want my own original 9 o'clock, drama.
Yeah.
And Kay had said to me, you know, it's great being on Coronation Street, but don't stay for more than 5 years, because if you do, you'll never leave.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right. I've seen that happen with other people. I mean, other people may have chosen to do that, which is brilliant. But I did leave exactly 5 years after I'd started, because the At Home with the Braithwaites got greenlit.
So did you write that in your own time, or was that, were you kind of commissioned to do that, or how did it work?
I'd written it. I'd actually written it about 10 years earlier.
Oh right.
It was like I think it was it started life as a stage play.
Right.
And I showed it to Tony Wood, who was a producer at Granada, and he commissioned it as a half-hour sitcom. And then I think he left, and Caroline Reynolds inherited it. She was the exec on Corrie at the time, and she recommissioned it as an hour-long drama rather than as a half-hour sitcom.
Yeah.
I think they wanted a drama that went out at the same time as Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So, you know, it's one of those things of just being in the right place at the right time with the right idea, which you can't kind of, is serendipity. Yeah. You can't kind of control it.
But
it
you actually have to have had some ideas in the first place, ideally.
And be in some sort of place that isn't just sat on your sofa at home.
Exactly.
Eating crisps.
Just watching telly and going, I could have written better than that.
I don't do that anymore, you know. I don't watch telly and eat crisps. I just at the end of the day, when I've been writing telly all day, the last thing I want to do now is watch drama. And it's sad, actually.
Yeah.
That's only happened to me recently, because why? I think I'm working on three shows at once at the moment, which is mad. And at the end of the day, I just want to.
Do you still eat crisps?
I do still eat crisps. Yeah, but
there we go. Okay, that's something.
Telling eating crisps. I'm writing telling eating.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
But at the end of the day, there isn't an end of the day, because I'm just a worker at the moment. I get up at 5 o'clock. That's what the archers taught me, actually, was to get up at 5 o'clock. Because if I was scared of the deadline, you just get up at and get on.
Steal some time from the day.
Get some cows milked and then get on with it.
Get some cows milked.
Yeah. Well, because as we sort of speak, I think I'm right in saying that the sort of third and final series of Happy Valley has sort of just been announced. Is that one of the things that you're working on at the moment?
Yes, it is.
So I feel like we skipped on there, because I did want to ask you what your favourite flavour of crisps were in the crisps section of this interview.
It's cheese and onion and prawn cocktail.
Actually, I was going to guess prawn cocktail. I've got like a sixth sense of guessing people's crisp flavours, and I was going to say prawn cocktail. Are you surprised with the cheese and onion, though?
And I like my favourite brand is Seabrook.
Yeah, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Obligatory. Yeah. Obligatory West Yorkshire crisps.
Yeah.
Very, very salty.
Yeah, when I worked in Leeds, that's what they had in the vending machine at Galaxy.
I grew up in Huddersfield, and I remember going, like when I went to uni and stuff, trying to explain to people that there were sweet corn flavoured crisps and that it was normal. What? Oh, they're very good, yeah.
Really? Yeah. What,
I don't know if they still do them, they used to.
Yo. Canadian ham.
Those are good ones.
Seabrook Canadian ham.
There's a flavour. Those stay with you. That Canadian ham is a lurking round flavour, that.
Yeah, for the rest of the day.
Sorry, I've derailed the chat a little bit, but I did.
Should
we talk about Ben Shaw's pop next, or should we move on to talk about more writing?
Do they still do Ben Shaw's
pop? See, now we're asking the big questions. Oh, I don't know.
I haven't seen Ben Shaw's for ages.
Yeah, there used to be one called Space Special that was like a really weird green colour. And looking back now, it's always a bit weird, isn't it, when a food manufacturer just doesn't want to apply any kind of flavour indicator to their product. It's just a generic, weird coloured
space-flavoured.
I got some dandelion and burdock the other day, which I haven't had for ages, and I couldn't believe why is Coke so big in dandelion and burdock?
I don't know. My youngest doesn't like dandelion and burdock, and it's been quite a wrench putting her up for adoption, if I'm honest, but... It feels like the right thing to do.
But they're so similar, aren't they? Dandelion and burdock and Coke, except dandelion and burdock
is better.
And Coke just doesn't tell you what vegetables they put in it.
Exactly.
Extract that flavour.
Sorry,
from.
Right, what were we talking about?
I was gonna ask, Sally, I was looking at a list of your awards. You've got quite a lot of awards, haven't you? I'm sort of imagining like a room dedicated to your awards, like a sort of Aladdin's cave of gleaming stuff. Where do they go? Where do you keep them?
I've started dotting them around the house. Cause
in the crisp cupboard.
I think I do that just so on any occasion you could always say, oh, it's just over there by the BAFTA. Do you know, if someone's asking for the keys or something like that.
I can't get away with that. It's too obvious. I've got six BAFTAs, so I've started spreading them around the house as opposed to putting them all together. But some of the labels have started falling off, the metal plaques.
Oh, you can get some new ones done, put what you like on.
falling off, and I keep sticking them back on with things like chewing gum. But then they fall off again, and they all need polishing. They're all a bit. Yeah. But no, I have got a lot of awards. Sorry, it's embarrassing.
No, don't worry. You've got an OBE as well now, haven't you?
So. I have got an OBE, but they haven't sent it to me yet.
What?
Well, they sent me.
I assumed you got it there and then. Did they not hand it
over?
They
said, because of COVID, you can either come to the palace and bring one guest, or you can come to a garden party next year and bring three guests. And I thought, well, first of all, I haven't got time to go to the palace anyway at the moment. So I said, oh, I'll come next year with three guests, thinking I might or might not. But they said, we'll send it in the post in September, and it's never come. And I don't know who to write to say.
Well, go straight to the top. I've seen people, like, when they want to complain to companies and stuff.
But she's.
They did send me a scroll that she'd signed, and so I think I've got an OBE, but I haven't actually got the.
Well, the on the plus yet. Side, when you go to the garden party, at least you'll know which bus to get there.
Yeah, well,
that's a good thought actually, because I was worrying about.
Watch that bus.
But sorry, I asked earlier on about. You said you're working on three different things at the minute, so the. So the new series of Happy Valley, I presume, is one of them. What else is going on?
So we're in post-production on Gentleman Jack 2.
Oh, right,
of course, yeah.
Which we've only just finished filming about a month ago, because we got closed down four times because of COVID. Oh, so the filming process went on significantly longer than it would normally do.
Yeah.
So we're just in post-production on that, which I haven't directed this time. I'm executing.
Right.
And I am in pre-production on Happy Valley and The Ballad of Renegade Nell, which we're making for Disney.
Ooh. Oh, yes, I saw something about that today, yeah, for Disney Plus.
Yeah, so we started filming that, I think, in March or April. So, again, we're at a slightly earlier stage than we are with Happy Valley, but not far behind. So we've got, I think we've got six of the eight scripts written there.
How the hell do you keep on top of all this when you've got all these things going on at the same time?
Literally
going
to be my next question, word for word, Dave. Yeah, come on. How does that work? Do you do it on different days, or do you, like, how do you...
No, I can't. It's hard is the answer, because the hardest thing for me is to sit down and write, because you just need to block everything else out. Like, you know, we're turning around new cuts of episodes of Gentleman Jack. I have to watch them and I have to comment on them.
Yeah.
You know, to quite tight deadline. So I can't just, you know, hide away and write, that sort of thing. So it's quite a hard balancing act. I'm lucky that I've got so much stuff and it's fantastic. So I can't complain, but it's quite tough to just keep everything balanced. But especially because I just haven't got my brain is a bit of a mess. It's not like I'm extraordinarily well organized or anything. It's kind of just lurching from one thing to the next and hoping you haven't forgotten anything, which I often
do. Didn't even know they did sweet corn crisps. So
I'll get a phone call saying, "Are you coming on the Zoom?" You know that happens.
And do you play it cool? Do you do? Yes, absolutely.
No, I'm terrible. I just go, "Oh my god, I'm shit." I'm doing all these two projects with Lookout Point, Faith Penhale's production company, and I get a huge amount of support. I'm working with some really talented people who, so it's, you know, it's a team effort. I mean, I have to write the scripts, but it, you know, as I say, storylining is a team effort. Just getting feedback from them is what keeps going, you know. So you're lucky when you get to when you're working professionally, because you do get a lot of support. Whereas when you writing, you know, on your own, sending scripts in on spec and that sort of thing, you are kind of very much on your own, and that is tough, you know, that's hard.
It definitely helps to bounce ideas off people.
Yeah.
Just coming back to Gentleman Jack, it seems like that's a project you're especially passionate about. Is that one that's been kind of on the boil for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, I've been interested in Dan Lister as long as I can remember. I think from being a teenager, I was always trying to find out stuff about her. And it was, you know, that's in the days before the internet, when you couldn't just press a button and get loads of info.
Of course, yeah.
And then I first pitched a drama about her in about 2002, 2003, and just no one was interested. No one had heard of her, no one had heard of me, apart from writing Braithwaite's. And so I just continued working on the diaries, transcribing the diaries, thinking about Ann Lister, thinking I'd do something else with Ann Lister.
There's a lot of diaries as well.
Oh, they're massive. I mean, it's hard to picture if you haven't seen them. There are 24 volumes. Mm-hmm. There's actually 27 altogether, but three of them are sort of smaller notebooks. And one of them's gone missing, I think. But there are 24 volumes.
Is the one that's missing up in your loft?
No.
A pile of BAFTAs. You can't see it.
I wish it was. There's 24 volumes. They're about 360 pages long each. Very tiny writing. There's 5 million words altogether. You know, that's about three times more than Pepys wrote.
Well, that's great. There could be a few series of Gentleman Jack then. We're not going to run out anytime soon.
I hope so. I hope, you know, we get commissioned again for a third series. You never know. You never know from series to series. You know, it's all dependent on viewing figures. Yeah. And you never know. You never know when something's going to hit and when it's going to miss. Mm. It's just alchemy and what's in the ether, you know, and what people want to watch at the time. And, yeah. You know, I've had my fair share of turkeys and you never know when you're going to get another one, to be honest. But, well, you know, series one went down very well and, you know, it's had a huge effect. There's a documentary coming out called The Gentleman Jack Effect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Anne Lister seems to have picked up a lot of new fans across the world.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
that's The Gentleman Jack Effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
So hopefully, I think series two, as I said, I haven't directed myself this time, but I think it's, I think it's better than season one. I think certainly the episodes I've been seeing over the last few weeks as they've been coming in through the edit process are really exciting. Mm. So hopefully we'll get another series.
We'll look forward to seeing
that. You've worked with Sir Anne Jones several times now, haven't you? How did you guys meet originally? Was there a Coronation Street link there?
No, I finished writing Corrie in 99 and I think Sir Anne came in the early noughties. Mm. I wrote a drama called Dead Clever in about 2007 and I wasn't heavily involved in it other than writing it. I was commissioned to write a drama based on a real life crime thing. And so I didn't get involved in production at all. And she played the lead in it, but I never met her because I didn't even go on set or anything. Right. It was one of those where I was a kind of a hired hand to write the script. So I didn't actually meet her. So that was the first time I kind of came across her. Mm. The producer, Cecil Williams, said, oh, what do you think about Sir Anne Jones playing the lead in this? And I was kind of aware that she was Karen MacDonald in Coronation Street, but I didn't actually watch Corrie. I stopped watching it when I left because I couldn't stand not knowing what happened.
It went downhill after you left, to be honest, I think. Yeah.
I didn't really want to leave. I left of my own accord, but I didn't really want to leave. A reaction to that was sadly to stop watching it, which, you know, I'd watched it since I was six. So it was a real, it's one of those things when you work in telly, it sometimes loses its magic, the magic of watching it. But anyway, that's another conversation. So I was kind of aware that Sir Anne Jones played Karen MacDonald, but I didn't really know what that meant other than the odd trailer that I'd seen and that she was kind of big news. She was like the new Sarah Lancashire, you know. Mm. So she came on board to play Julie Bottomley in Dead Clever. And it was brilliant. I really loved it when they finished the edit on it. But that was the first time I'd seen it and I didn't meet her. Mm. And the first time I met her was in a meeting to discuss Scott and Bailey because it was her idea. It was her and Sally Lindsay's idea was Scott and Bailey.
Yeah.
Right. And they asked me on board to write the scripts. So that was the first time I met Sir Anne. So we did Scott and Bailey.
It was Unforgiven.
Oh, Unforgiven. I forgot about Unforgiven. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Unforgiven but Forgotten.
It was Unforgiven. And then we discussed Scott and Bailey. Sorry. It was that way around. Yeah. Yes, I had forgotten Unforgiven. Sorry about that. Yes. So I've worked with the four times.
I like to think of you as like good mates, two northern lasses who go out on the razzle sometimes.
Knee-deep in crisps. Sally, I'm really aware that you said that you had to be gone at 7:15, which is about what time it is now. But much as I'd love to carry on talking to you, but if you've got to go,
I'm afraid I do. But it has been really nice talking.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for chatting to us.
Thanks a lot,
Sally. All right. Very kind of you.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Lady, brilliant to talk to, and just
fantastic tasting crisps as well. Which
I hadn't really thought about Seabrook crisps for a good many years.
Did I ever tell you about my brilliant crisp idea?
I think you've probably had a lot of brilliant crisp ideas over the years, Tom. But which one,
Tommy?
I had this a long time ago, and it's never left me. And it's become, I don't know if it's become more possible, but less impressive as the years have gone on, as crisp manufacturers have started to offer a wider variety of flavours. But in the early 2000s, I had an idea of Christmas dinner. An entire Christmas dinner, but just made out of crisps.
So you have a turkey crisp, a potato.
Well, these days you can get turkey crisps. Back in the day, you couldn't. But you'd have your bacon crisps as your pigs in blankets, your plain crisps as your roast potatoes, Seabrook's sweet corn crisps, as mentioned in the interview, as a vegetable accompaniment. And then, you know, maybe prawn cocktail for starter. Gentlemen?
Yeah. Well,
why not?
A bit of
and then Christmas pudding ones.
jelly crisps.
Well, that's the thing now. Now they do all weird. You can get mince pie flavoured crisps.
Actually, there
are.
Yeah,
so
I saw
it's kind of ruined
pies.
It a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, you say ruined it. What they've actually done is do that exact idea.
But they've never called it Christmas
but not
dinner.
Put them in
why
the
have they not
bag.
Done that? There should be an advert, shouldn't it?
They haven't done. Yeah, make
that
your,
is nice, Tommy.
Your perfect
that is nice.
Christmas dinner.
I can't believe you're giving away all these brilliant ideas on the podcast, Tom.
I know.
For free.
I know.
Hey, fellas, does it make you wonder, interviewing Sally, does it make you wonder who else might come on the show?
No, I think we've
I think
we should name some people.
Jeffrey Archer,
get him on. I think we should name some people we'd like to have on the show. Who's in your like dream people?
Do you know
like
who I'd
on?
Love to talk to about the writing? Obviously you don't. That's why in this situation with the question you've asked. But if you were to ask me, which you have done, I would.
I do. No, it's all right, Tom. I know already, you don't need to tell us.
Dave, what about you?
I think I would like to have Jesse Armstrong on the show and maybe Lucy Prebble.
Oh, you got a list,
as
haven't
well.
You?
I have, yeah. Well, I actually think about these things, Tom. You know,
and have you contacted them?
No, I haven't contacted any of them, no.
Don't be stupid.
No, I've thought about them. I've thought about some names. Natasha Hodgson, I think I've mentioned before.
Yeah.
I'd like to have Natasha Hodgson, writer of The Sink. These wonderful writers I'd like to
and,
get on.
And for the sake of Bairdie, Tommy, because Bairdie doesn't know who you want. Right?
Yeah, obviously. Mackenzie Crook, I think, would be great. I think a proper under-the-radar, brilliant writer.
Yeah.
He's good, kids' books, Wurzel Gummidge.
I still haven't watched The Detectorists, I still haven't seen
and
it.
I was going to say, and The Detectorists really is, I know everyone says it's a brilliant unsung thing, but if everyone's saying it, can it be unsung? But it kind of is a really, really good, lovely piece of work.
Yeah. But you have contacted his agent, haven't you, Tom?
Oh, yeah, he said, yeah.
And what said, no. What did you get back?
I mean, that's... a very, very nice reply.
Oh, was it? Oh, that's
he's
good.
He's a bit busy at the minute. maybe try again in the new year. So, January the 1st, I am going down to the office. I've had a look on Google Maps. There's some railings outside. So I thought I'm going to tie myself to them, just wear my underpants.
That should get his attention.
David Baddiel is another one I'd like.
Daisy May Cooper.
Daisy May Cooper. Yeah.
I'd like to have Daisy May Cooper on. She's ace. James Acaster. He's just brought a book out, hasn't he?
Has he? If we get him on, we could ask him if he wants to be Byron in your sitcom,
exactly.
John.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All comes together, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is tune in to season two to see just how many of these big names we have on. Oh, I think you will be surprised.
Yeah. Episode one, if we could just read out all of the rejection letters.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
All the different ways that people have said no to being on the show. That would be nice.
Yeah, we'll do that. We should do that as the trailer for season
that's
two,
good.
Part of the trailer.
Everyone's excuses for not coming on the show. Brilliant.
Yeah. And if anyone listening has any contacts to people they think should be on the show.
Good point. They might be a relative or something. That's a very good point.
That's true. Yeah, because things like that do happen, don't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's ideas. Ideas for the future. Mm.
What about the now? What's happening now?
Well, next week, I think we've got something quite spectacular happening, haven't we?
I mean, it is literally a spectacular thing,
Christmas,
isn't it?
It's Christmas, isn't it? So you've got it, haven't you?
Yep.
It's going to be pretty sparkly.
It's the kind of thing that people can put on Christmas Day while you're eating your Christmas dinner, have a really good listen to the spectacular, the Christmas spectacular that we're currently putting together. It's just it really is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable what we think passes as entertainment.
Yeah. So tune in for the Christmas spectacular. You really will not believe it.
that's about right.
But until then, there's not really much else for us to say,
which is unusual for one of Dave's goodbyes.
and the best Christmas present that you could give us this year would be a little review. Go online and leave us a little review. Tell everyone how much you like the show.
Or one of those massive boxes of Walker's crisps. You know, the mixed ones.
That'd be the best. Second best present would be...
But yeah, a review would be...
Yeah, we're very grateful for you lending us your ears. It's nice that you chose to listen to us when there are so many other excellent things you could be listening to.
Don't tell them about the other stuff, John.
You've just cut our listenership in half.
There's nothing else to listen to. I don't think there's any other podcast. There's not a lot of podcasts, is there?
No.
Very, very little choice, so you're probably fine here.
But thanks for listening.
No,
we do appreciate it.
We do really appreciate it.
All right. Well, bye then.
Short and sweet, Dave. Short and sweet. That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah. And with that, the music began, the waffle ceased, and they all went to bed. Good night. Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?